Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Many folks in San Antonio, Austin, across Texas, across the country, and around the world have fantastic stories of Doug Somm about how they watched him perform, create music, and it was an important influence on them. Doug, with Augie Myers, started the band Sir Douglas Quintet. They had a few hits back in the 1960s with a strange sound that went on to be defined as the Tex-Mex sound. Sounded like this.
Douglas Quintet is back. We'd like to thank all of our beautiful friends all over the country with all the beautiful vibrations. We love you.
Teeny bopper, my teenage lover.
Well, that's a classic rock song, man. This makes you start bopping along when you hear that. Well, this Sunday, there's a tribute to Doug Somm and at the South Texas Popular Culture Center, and author Joe Nick Potowski will screen a sample of his work in progress, a documentary about Doug. And we're joined in the studio with his son, Sean Somm, also a fantastic musician, and Augie Myers, legendary musician here, talking about Doug Somm and the legend and the stories and the what he created. Joe Nick, since you're on the line and you created this documentary, let me get started with you. Tell me about what you're working on.
Well, long and short of it is you're among friends there, Dave, and we're all friends. But when you start getting down to the nitty-gritty, it's what I say on the website that's about the film, What Does Texas Sound Like? Well, it sounds like Doug Somm, and it's not just the sound of rock and roll like you were saying there, but we're talking country western, rhythm blues, jump blues, western swing, and you know, you can't talk about Doug Somm without the sound that Augie Meyer brought to the table. And Augie Myers has his own thing, but whatever we think about Doug, I mean, it all goes back to San Antonio, and so that's why we're doing this little thing. And I'm looking forward to it because this is one subject that you can't get musicians in the know together and talk about Doug without stories being told and everybody laughing at the end of it one way or another.
So we lost Doug, and he had a heart attack, died in his sleep in Tucson or
Taos, New Mexico.
And how long ago was that?
It's November 18th. Go ahead, Joe.
Look, Sean, tell us.
No, you go ahead.
Oh, it's November 18th, 99. 14 years just this last November 18th.
Right, and
a few weeks back.
And he's your dad, and you, mm-hmm. you together in 1968 were on the cover of the Rolling Stones together.
Yeah, I was real close to my pop. You know, the whole Somm family was my brother Shannon, my sister Dawn, myself. We were all real close to my dad, and we just had different grooves with him, you know, and me and his groove were the music thing, you know, and he just drug me around since I was a little kid, you know. But first and foremost, I'm just glad that Joe's stepping up to the plate and doing this. I think Dad deserves it, you know. To me, Doug Somm is one of those influential musicians that deserve the attention. You know, he's one of those guys that I always say his record sales, although he's done well record-wise, I still say his influence outweighs his record sales because his influence is immense, you know.
So, Augie, you and Doug together formed a Sir Douglas Quintet. So talk about, I mean, you both grew up here in San Antonio. You knew each other from the streets of San Antonio playing together. Talk about how y'all got that going.
Well, my mama had a grocery store, and Doug's parents used to come there and trade. I mean, we were like 12, 13 years old. But Doug had a band back then, and he was playing already, steel guitar and fiddle. And I was just deadling around on the piano. But we never got together until 1964 when the Dave Clark Five come to San Antonio, and my band, I had a group called the Golans, Denny Esmond, the Golans, and I had a Vox organ. I had the only one in America at that time, and Doug was the next band after me, and then after that, the Dave Clark Five. And there was a guy out there named Huey Moe, and Doug had long hair, and I had long hair. And he said, man, y'all ought to put a band together. And Doug said, well, I said, well, we know each other. And Doug said, come over to my house, man. We'll just start grooving and rehearsing. So we grooved more than we rehearsed, and then we started playing out on a club called Blue Note. And there was a couple out there dancing, and Doug used to say, man, she's about a mover. But he used to call her, she's a body mover. And that was the original title of the song. They had to change it back in those days.
To our sensitive ears back then, couldn't handle She's a Body Mover.
Oh, even television. I mean, everybody had to sleep in twin beds. Think about it. You know, you couldn't say the word pregnant on television.
You can't say it on radio either, so we got to do
okay.
It.
So, close your eyes, ears, everybody. I'm sorry.
Okay. All right, so you started the band off, and but of course Doug was a child prodigy. He could play the fiddle and the mandolin and all sorts of things as soon as he could walk, right, Sean?
Actually, me and Joe have been spending a lot of time together at my house kind of researching everything and going over all this stuff. I got kind of a little museum at my house, my own little kind of museum. And like I've explained to Joe, and, you know, we've been talking about, his parents were very involved with him since, you know, gosh, what, you know, like, make his first records at like seven, eight. I have recordings really young of him. And
little
the point
Doug.
Is that his dad would be his roadie and carry his equipment. His mom made all his clothes. And, you know, they were very supportive of, you know, little Doug ran the household, you know. Actually, his Bootsy back then, he was called Bootsy.
And he performed on the stage the last night that Hank Williams performed.
Actually, that is correct. Those are one of the few things I can actually say. When you spend a lot of time with your father on the road, you talk a lot about a lot of stuff because, you know, what is there to do? And I asked him specifically, I said, what do you remember about that, Dad? And he said, I remember it was at the Skyline Club. Like the Joe, was that the last gig? Joe, Nick, wasn't that the last gig?
No, the very last gig on North Lamar and beyond the city limits of Austin at that time.
And that was Hank Williams' like last gig or something, wasn't it?
That was his very last gig. He went back to Alabama, and I think he was on his way somewhere to the Northeast when he actually died several days later. But look, this is what gets to me. I've told a lot of stories. I've gotten to do that over 35, 40 years of writing, primarily about Texas and primarily about music and Willie and Stevie Ray and Selena. But in my mind, this is the great untold story in my life, what I've gotten to witness. And, you know, Jan Reed's written a fine book about Doug, a biography that University of Texas Press published a few years ago. But to me, the way to tell this story is get Doug's voice, get his music, and get those around him to be able to sit and talk with cameras going to Augie and to Flacco. Listen, San Antonio, you all don't know what you've got in your midst. I mean, these guys are giants, and they're cool people beyond that. So this is something that's been burning in me for a while, and I'm just lucky to get people like Augie and Flacco and some other older soulful cats to kind of guide me along the way, including Spot Barnett, who's going to come to the talk and be part of this panel discussion Sunday. If you want to learn about the movie, and this is a new realm for me. I'm a writer, but I'm off in film land, and we've done this five-minute trailer, and now we're in the underwriting phase. But you can learn all about the project and kind of my take on what this all means. Go to allaboutthegroove.com. Because all About the Groove is what Doug was all about.
Okay, allaboutthegroove.com. We want to open this up to callers. If you've got a great story about Doug's song, we want to hear from you. Call in. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. You could also email me at thesource@tpr.org. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. With me in the studio, Augie Myers, Sean Somm. We're talking, and on the line, we got Joe Nikpotowski. We're talking about Doug Somm, the legendary San Antonio musician who took rock and roll. He took the native sounds, the sounds of the streets of San Antonio, came up with something fresh, something new, something that's timeless. Because when you hear the music that you guys crafted, Augie, it still rocks today. It doesn't sound like the clinky old stuff that you may have heard from an era, a period piece. It sounds always fresh. So, Augie, how did y'all do that?
On a four-track. In those days, I mean, it was raw recording, man. I mean, you know. So it was fun, but we never thought it was going to last like it did. I mean, you know, it's unbelievable. I was in Italy last month, and all the people brought Sir Douglas Quintet records. You know, I've never met these people before, and they bring in records and pictures I've never seen of me and Doug from back in those that era, you know. So it's, it amazes me that it's still going on like that.
So
it should, anyway.
Yeah, it's amazing. So Joe Nick, you're putting together the documentary. You're going to show a sizzle reel this Sunday at the South Texas Popular Cultural Center, which is like a little storefront that's a catty corner to Good Time Fridays on Broadway and Mulberry. They have lots of
1017 East Mulberry.
A lot of cool stuff there all the time. So Sunday afternoon, people are going to be coming together, swapping stories, playing music, talking about Sir Douglas. And do you think this is going to be an opportunity for you to get some nuggets for your documentary?
Well, don't think I'm not going to be fishing for stories. And I have a feeling some folks from San Antonio are going to get together and tell some stories. So, yeah, I'm on the prowl now, and I'm really looking for old photos and archival material like any old video or audio, and that's been
or photographs. If people have some great photographs of Doug, maybe in their personal collection, in a
Listen,
scrapbook.
Sean, I could have stopped at Sean's and just not gone beyond there, but the one that really grabbed me when Doug was 6 years old, he was opening up a grocery store in San Antonio, and that's the kind of stuff. And then he was on KMAC at the age of six.
That's awesome.
And so that teen era when everything was blowing up and rock and roll came to town and everybody's getting swept up in rhythm and blues. The thing is, there's a lot of great musicians, but I don't think anyone touched on all these kinds of musics as like Doug did. I mean, it was rock and roll, rhythm and blues, and country western, and he did them all authentically. And Tex-Mex and Conjunto, without Doug, I don't think Flaco would have been heard by the world. I don't think without pulling
well to the rock and roll world, you know, it was.
Well, It was very much of a regional thing up until then, but Doug exposed Flaco to an audience outside of Texas.
And Flaco gives him tons of credit for that, yeah.
So that's how
Joe Nick's absolutely right. Flaco said this to me on the tour bus 100 times that, you know, Doug went to him and said, hey, you can do what you're doing with, you know, my style of music. Because what Joe Nick just now said, a lot of people don't realize in 2013, that sound, all everybody knows, that sound, you know, what, 20, 30 more years ago, 40 years ago, it was a regional thing. It wasn't what it is today, you know, where...
No, it's beyond regional. I mean, if you know, you weren't Spanish-speaking first, you didn't really know this sound unless you were really looking for it.
Absolutely. That's the thing to remember, and, you know.
So, Sean...
That's what's, there was one tape I heard from 72 where Doug is talking with Jerry Wexler and Dr. John at the Armadillo World Headquarters. They've just done this album with Bob Dylan and Fat Ed Newman up in New York. It hadn't come out yet. But Dr. John's talking about, yeah, that Chicano polka, that's going to be like the second line from where I come from in New Orleans. And Doug's saying, yeah, it's a San Antonio thing. They don't even get it in Austin yet.
Absolutely.
And it's really true that back then no one heard this. It was almost a local San Antonio sound. And today we take it for granted as one of the great American folk music sounds anywhere, and Flaco's the great ambassador of all this.
What Joe just said is preaching. He's preaching the choir right there. He's like laying it down. So if you just heard what he said, that is that's the truth right there, man.
Our phone lines are open. If you want to talk about Doug Somm, we want to hear from you. Give us a call, 614-8980, 614-8980. Of course, Doug, of course, he went on to create the Texas Tornadoes with Augie and with Flaco and Freddie Fender. And then y'all did an album not that long ago after the passing of Doug.
Yeah, and with Freddie, yeah.
And with tracks with Freddie.
Yeah, yeah. One misunderstanding is that we kind of put the album together, that it's a bunch of vault stuff. It's not. We actually, the only track that's from the vault is Doug's. The whole thing, Freddie came in, we worked as a band and as a unit to record. It was right before he passed away, obviously. And no, we worked as a band to do that. And that was going to be something we were doing kind of in honor of Pop, you know.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that vault.
Yeah, go ahead.
What is in that vault?
Oh, there's some good stuff in there.
I mean, actually, what we've not heard that Doug Somm has recorded.
I'll tell you right now, and My two big projects besides touring with the Tornadoes this year, you know, we've been touring every year, and it's all about Doug. That's what this is. To me, that's the important thing. All these projects are about Doug, you know, and that's kind of the end-all be-all for me. But actually, my two big projects besides the Tornadoes are Helping Joe with this, and we got a unreleased album, or two maybe, but I know for sure one coming out for sure, probably, you know, mid 2014. It just depends on how the progress goes, but there's some great stuff.
So,
how about Walla Walla, Augie? You remember Walla Walla? How's that for a title? Walla, I'll throw out a title. There's an obscure title, but yeah, there's some great stuff in the vault. And I think with what Joe's doing, and me and Joe and all the gang, we're all rallying around Joe. So he's got our full support. He's been hanging out at my house. We're just diving into Doug Psalm 101.
It's hard to have a revival for a great musician who's never went away. Because I feel like I'm.
That's around always... here, though. One thing you got to realize. And please get this with the respect intended. I realize when you go outside of your boundaries, it becomes a dual-edged sword of what me and Augie and the guys are doing. It's partly turning people on and partly kind of giving the old fans a little bit of a walk down memory lane. But there are a lot of people outside our boundaries that we are turning on to this music, which is an important thing I found out, too.
A new generation, a new parts unknown. Let's get a caller on the line. Toby wants to join the conversation. Toby, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, yeah, I was Doug's drummer right before he went to California. We were playing at the Blue Note. And I got to tell Sean something about his daddy. It really has nothing to do with music. We were playing, Jack Barber was playing bass back then. We were playing up in Killeen. And we had a black sax player named Beatty.
Beatty.
Well, we were coming back to San Antonio. I want to say we stopped at George West or somewhere. Of course, Beatty was a baker back then and became a police officer afterward.
Yeah.
But we went in the restaurant, get something to eat. Beatty stayed in the car because he had to go to work at 4 in the morning. So we all went in to eat. And for some reason, I guess Beatty woke up and came to get some coffee. Well, the people there at the restaurant says, guess what? We can't serve Negroes here. I'll be damned, man. Doug just looked at all of us. We didn't say a damn thing. We all just stood up. We'd already ordered and everything. They left in Doug's Cadillac and left. We, you know, the hell with y'all. So we got to Austin, man. Believe it or not, it was a Mexican restaurant. We stopped outside an old Doug's 60 Cadillac, and we went in to order. Same thing, man. The guy says, I'm sorry, we can't serve the Negro. I said, guess what? We all took our food, man. We went outside and ate our enchiladas on the hood of Doug's car. And I tell you what, I never respected your father more than I did that night, man. I thought he was the greatest thing since sliced bread. And if I can go up Sunday and we'll talk about old times with Doug, like I said, I was his last drummer right before he went to California.
Well, thank you for the call, Toby. That's an awesome story.
That's a great story.
And for the record, Beatty is the maraca player on She's About to Move Her. He was in the band, right, Augie? He played maracas on She's About that maraca sound. That's Beatty, man. So, later, buddy. Thank you.
Thank you for that call. It shows you that he was about blending those lines, racial lines, not just in music, but also in real life.
He wasn't a musical snob, and he wasn't a personal snob. I mean, he dug the real cats, you know, and musically he was not a snob at all. A lot of people are, as Dad would say, blues magoos. I'm just in the blues, or I'm just into jazz. Doug could walk into a room with a punk band and just get into, oh, what a groove, man. And just, you know, Joe, Augie both know what I'm talking about. He just dive right in, you know.
So Augie, y'all played so many locations together. What is your most memorable concert your performance? What strikes out in your mind?
How long we got on the radio, man? Because there's a lot of them, man. I mean, everywhere we played, it was like magic. I mean, we went with Doug. Cause he said, let's rehearse. And we rehearsed 10 songs, and we'd go on stage and do 10 different songs. I mean, it was always that way. You know, I mean, it was fun, you know. But, I mean, it was like, as J.R. Chadwell, he's gone now, but he was one amender for the first show back then. He always said Doug was like a mental horse. He'd run off in 7 different directions at once, you know.
I was watching on YouTube, you know, y'all were playing on David Letterman. And that was like and Paul Schaefer in the band, just y'all were blending together and kicking out some great music.
Oh, David Letterman, he was kind of weird. He was scared of Freddie and scared of me and Flacco because he said, I've never seen people like that. You know what I mean? What do, you know?
And then when Dave comes over to talk to the band, Freddie grabs him and like whispers for a long time into his ear. Any idea what Freddie was saying to him?
He's probably talking Spanish and he didn't know what he was talking about. But I'm going to tell you a funny story that when we were on the show, I went to Shepherd's and bought some cowboy hats. And Paul's an old friend of mine. I gave him one. I gave one to Dave. And Dave David Letterman said, I don't wear stuff like that. And I said, I do, and I put it on my head. Well, about 3 months later, David bought some farm up in Colorado, a ranch or something. And to make a long story short, he called Warner Brothers and said, he wants Augie to give him his hat. And Warner Brothers called me and said, you got his hat? And I said, it's on my head. I said, if he wants one, he's got to go buy one. So Warner Brothers bought one for him. And they took it off of our royalties.
Charged you for it.
Yeah. And then David was giving Paul Schaefer all sorts of heck about the wearing the hat on you know, yeah. Where's Duty? All right, so
Doug did all those shows. I mean, Joe Nix got a lot of digging around you, but he did all. I mean, man, they did. Everyone knows Hullabaloo, but he did Dick Clark and, you know, all those Ready Steady Goes overseas.
I know, but y'all did Fridays when Andy Kaufman was on that legendary
when he had the
night.
Breakdown. Yeah, yeah,
that was huge.
Yeah, yeah.
That was
Augie was telling me about what was it? Ready Steady Go when the Beatles showed.
Oh, we're so out of time. If people want to hear these stories, they got to go to the South Texas Pop Cultural Center on Mulberry on Sunday. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Show up early if you want to get in.
Oh, yeah, it's a very small venue. All right, thank you so much for joining us, Augie Myers, Sean Somm, and Joe Nepitowski. This is The Source on KSTX.